everybody. Bill Buckmaster in the driver's seat, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. Tom, big day today for those of us who love radio. Today's World Radio Day, so congratulations to all of us.
Well, congratulations to the world radio community.
To the world radio community. And as a kid, I remember playing around with my dad's shortwave radio. And I think that's kind of how I got the bug, wanting to someday visit those faraway places and maybe someday be on the radio. And it all turned out the way it happened.
Did you ever use one of those crystal radios where, I'm not sure how it worked, but you had a crystal rock, and you could put a wire on it and move it around, and sometimes you could pick up radio stations
on
it.
No, I never did that. No, we had one of those, the ones with the big tubes and the lights and everything, and it was neat.
I'm thinking about was probably Stone Age radio.
It might have been. Might have been a little before my time. It is Thursday, February 13th, 2025. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center here, a growing operation in central Tucson. 5 radio stations now under one roof, all the stations doing very well. It's great to have all of my colleagues here from the other stations. But this station's 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We're still excited about last month when we launched our 15th year for our Buckmaster radio program, and now my 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We have our worldwide live listening. We make it very easy for you. You can listen to the program live at buckmastershow.com. Very proud of the fact that all of our programs, pretty much every show we have done since January of 2011 when we launched the radio project, is available on podcast. For our telephone interviews, 790-2040, that is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we check in with what's going on at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. Chris Dietz is with us, the Vice President of Operations out at TIA. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself, Bill?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Boy, a large operation. You oversee a lot of folks who really keep the airport running, and it's a big deal. It's a nearly $50 million operation, operating budget.
$50 million a year operating budget.
It's a big deal. So there's a lot involved, and kind of give us the overall footprint of what you kind of oversee.
Absolutely. So thank you for inviting us on a show. I appreciate it. Great opportunity, great community. Appreciate you promoting the airport here as well. You know, we're easy to fly through, convenient as well. So the ops division, so there's multiple divisions within the airport world. Like I said, I oversee the operations division. And within that division, we have 189 staff members within that particular division.
Wow.
There's 280 total in the TAA. So around 68% fall under this division. Mm-hmm. The ops division is really primarily responsible for, just as the word says, keeping the airport operating, mm-hmm. Allowing aircrafts to come and go, our tenants to operate, just keeping us going 24/7. A lot of regulatory stuff comes along with that as well, and keeping things flowing.
Well, people want a safe experience. That's the number one thing. And you've got police and fire part of that operations, but really everything's included. Clean restrooms, right? And I think one year you guys actually won awards for some of the cleanest airport restrooms, and folks who've traveled a lot, just some airports going through some of the bigger airports, you kind of dread going into the washroom. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of one of the things we take pride in. It seems funny, but you know, our airport is kind of a boutique airport for the experience, mm-hmm. the feel of it, easy. But yes, the custodial side is definitely under the operations division either. Maybe what I'll do is just kind of throw out the groups that are under this division, if you don't mind.
What do you got?
So we start out, we have the ACC, which is Airport Communications Center. It's kind of the hub. It's a 911 dispatch center. They route all the calls throughout the airport, emergencies, custodial, maintenance, you name it. It all goes through that department. We have our airside operations department. They are the folks that go out and do runway inspections, mm-hmm. check construction sites, make sure that we're compliant with our FAA partners for Part 139 regulation, which is what allows aircraft to fly in. We have a certificate that allows mm-hmm. commercial aircraft to fly in.
How often do they go out and check the runways?
They do it twice daily, minimum. Yeah. We actually have special inspections as well, but we have to do it during the daytime and the nighttime, and mm-hmm. prior to the first departure of the commercial airlines of the day, too.
And folks that may not be familiar with how important that is, it's extremely important at an airport operation to have to check the runways. A part of a plane could fall off. Even the smallest part can be an issue.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things they're actually looking for is what's called FOD. Foreign object debris. Could be, like you said, a bolt falls off, a piece of rubber falls off, someone lands, you know, maybe they had an oil leak. That's mm-hmm. what they're looking for on the runway surface, but they're also looking at lights. They're mm-hmm. looking at to make sure they're not broke, wildlife, mm-hmm. you know, so many aspects of that because, you know, on takeoff, if something picked up a piece of FOD, you know, you could have an issue going on. So, and to the custodial department you mentioned as well, that falls underneath in our operations division. We also have a maintenance division, which includes our airfield maintenance, our electricians, emergency management, HVAC, facilities, fleet, landscaping, and then some general office staff. And then we have our police.
I can imagine what your air conditioning bill would be like. Well, in, say, July, you know, trying to keep everything cool at the airport. I mean, that could be kind of costly, probably part of that operating budget there of a lot of million.
Absolutely.
And $1 million.
Our HVAC folks get very, very busy in, mm-hmm. in making sure that's maintained. And we have to do a lot of preventative maintenance too, and making sure that we don't have breakdowns and we have redundant systems as well that are in place. Three more departments quick, but we have the police, two more police department and the fire department fall underneath the ops division as well.
You have a full police department.
We do. Yeah. So we have a total of 33 sworn officers out there. Mm-hmm. That includes 30 regular officers and then three canine officers. We have three canine teams, and they have the police support as well, and that's like our badging office, and then our office staff, and then we have what's called public safety officers. So those are the folks that you see directing traffic out in front of the terminal. They're out in the airfield or out in the AOA, aircraft operations area, doing inspections of vehicles that are entering the secure area, looking for, you know, prohibited items, making sure that the items are secure. So there's a lot of divisions underneath the departments here as well, too. So,
and then you guys work with, of course, TSA and some of the other federal partners, right?
Yes, we work with all state, federal, local, county, a lot of relationships. It's important. One good way to think of us at the airport, we're our own little city within a city. We're very self-sufficient operating. The FAA wants us to be as self-sustainable as possible. So yes, mm-hmm. we do partner with a lot of those agencies. TSA mandates regulatory for us in multiple aspects. You know, one of the reasons we just added officers here in the last year or so was there was a security mandate that came out for aviation worker screening that we now screen workers entering into the areas when they're coming to work. So we had to add some of those to the PSOs and then sworn officers as well. There's the regulatory compliance for badging. You know, making mm-hmm. sure our badging program is good, our mm-hmm. badging office folks, you know, are mm-hmm. taking fingerprints, clearing applications, and just making sure we have good people in a position, and there's requirements that don't allow you to get a badge as well.
So when someone comes to work in the morning, are they now screened?
At this point, it's a random screening process. Mm-hmm. But yes, there is a certain amount of hours and certain different doors we check, but eventually it will be 100% aviation worker screening as well.
What is your job like on a kind of a day-to-day basis? I'm sure it's like drinking from a fire hose because there's a lot of moving parts, right?
There are a lot of moving parts.
Tell me a little bit about how your day works.
Oh, boy. You know, one thing I can say about the airport industry, I've been in it for about 23 years now, mm-hmm. is every day is different at the airport. So sure. I can't describe a typical day, of course, mm-hmm. but it's always interesting. That's one thing I really like about it, is it's something different every day. You're dealing with different people. But in a nutshell, it just really overseeing that from my position, it's really the high level looking to the future. What are the needs of the departments? Because we have directors and we have managers mm-hmm. that kind of get involved in the day-to-day and the planning. So it's a lot of discussions with those folks looking at what is the vision for the operations mm-hmm. department? Where do we want to take this department?
Expansion.
Exactly. You know, expansion is huge right now.
Got that runway going, that runway project, which is not included in your yearly operating budget, right?
No, that we have what's called Airfield Safety Enhancement Program. It was identified that we needed to look at the whole airport configuration. Mm-hmm. FAA is always changing the standards, right? Mm-hmm. And our airfield needed to be updated some standards to eliminate some hot spots that were out there, which are areas of concern. So yeah, we took out our smaller infield airport or runway and are rebuilding it. And mm-hmm. we're expected for that runway to open in 2027. I can't take much credit in this project because I've only mm-hmm. been here around a year. Mm-hmm. And it's been 10 years in the making. And mm-hmm. it's a really big project. Our project management office, actually, and projects office are working through that project.
It's a joint operating facility in that you do have the Air National Guard operating out there.
Correct.
Will that be different with the new runway coming on or no?
So one of the things is it's actually provided some improvements for our air traffic flow. By having a second runway, we can launch. We can't do simultaneous operations, can't mm-hmm. take off at the same exact time, but mm-hmm. they can stagger them better. Mm-hmm. Before, there was only the one, you know, bigger
right.
runway.
And folks would sometimes have to wait a little while there was activity with the aircraft from the Air National Guard. I, for one, love watching those planes do those touch and goes, but sometimes that can be a little bit of a delay. So the new runway, when does that construction begin?
So it's been under, the project's been underway for multiple years. It's approximately $400 million project. Mm-hmm. The new construction of the runway that is being built has actually been underway for quite a while. A lot of the underground work is being done. I just heard, I think it's this fall, that we're looking to actually pour the pavement for it with a February of 2027 date is what we're shooting for right now to open. It takes about a year and a half to 2 years with the FAA to get everything published to say, hey, sure. you have a new runway.
Yeah.
And then when that one opens, we take down the other runway to do some work on tying the runways together because we have safety areas you can't work within and all these mm-hmm. other rules and mm-hmm. regulations. But one improvement going back to the guard was we did add another balk. It's the arresting cables that the F-16s use. So they have the ability for the opposite direction runway now for that as well. So we have had some improvements there too. Mm. We work with the military closely. There's different funding sources. We look at their needs as well and say, hey, what works? What should we collaborate together? So we did end up building a arm-de-arm pad for them and a blast fence area, but they, you know, chipped in their share as well to improve their airfield.
The iconic tower that says Tucson, it's just, it's part of the kind of the signature. It's almost like the iconic Saguaro Desert as a symbol, that wonderful building that was the air traffic control center. And of course, now there is a new air traffic control center out at Tucson International. How is that other building being utilized?
Currently, recently, I think in the last year, don't quote mm-hmm. me exactly on that, but Customs and Border Protection now operates out of the base of the tower.
I see.
So they were in, if you're familiar with out there, the Gate C area.
Yes.
They were next to that. Mm-hmm. So they have actually moved into the base of the tower, which has freed up some space, which we are now constructing the old CBP area into a police station for our officers. Mm-hmm. Currently, the police station or police officers are kind of distributed, had some office space in the terminal, they had some offsite, they had some in various areas. So we'll all get them underneath one roof. So the tower is being used for that. And then we use it as an antenna farm. We have a lot of antennas that we use for our stuff. You know, we recently just put in a phone network for a private wireless 5G network for our systems to run off of, so we have full coverage for our airfield inspections and all that. Mm-hmm. And then we have cameras and such up there as well.
All right. Take a break right here, talking with Chris Dietz, the Vice President of Operations, a little bit about what talking about what it takes on a day-to-day operation to run a large airport. It's fascinating stuff because it has to be all choreographed. Chris has lots of folks and departments, including even landscaping. When you see those beautiful, when you come out of the terminal building and you see those giant saguaros that I can remember when I first flew into Tucson back in the 60s when I was coming out to the University of Arizona, I was going, whoa, I think that might have been the first time I'd seen a saguaro, but probably the same group of saguaros that were there originally. Anyway, Chris, we'll talk some more. Take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Thursday afternoon. Tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, Jan Lesher, who is the Pima County Administrator, will be our Friday Focus interview. And my co-media host will be Jim Ninsel from TucsonSentinel.com. But right now, let's hear from the wonderful people who sponsor the Buckmaster Show. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. We do our telephone interviews. The Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're talking the airport right now, Tucson International Airport. And if folks have any questions about the airport, they have a fine website, flytucson.com. All sorts of great information about what's going on out there. And Chris Dietz knows a lot about what's going on out there, and that's his job, Vice President of Operations. His footprint's about 200 folks in just about every imaginable department, police and fire, maintenance, on and on it goes. And Chris, let's talk a little bit about some of the things we see going, well, we don't see that are going on, but are really important to making the airport look good and function well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill, again. I think that's the thing. There's so much behind the scenes. You know, when you say you work at the airport, you know what everybody automatically assumes?
What?
Hey, you work for the airlines.
Yes.
You throw my bag. Do you wave the airplanes in?
Oh, can we blame you for that missed luggage?
Yeah, or, hey, do you get free tickets? That's
yes.
The first thing people ask me.
Wow.
And there's so many things that go on behind the scenes, and not just operationally, but you have all of our finance departments, our business commercial development, our projects departments. Mm-hmm. Those aren't within my wheelhouse. However, the departments we talked about earlier, for instance, wildlife. You know, our ops department goes out and checks for wildlife. They maintain, yeah. They have to get trappers if needed. They scare off the animals. They keep culverts. You know, it's our maintenance's job to fix
you
culverts.
You don't really want a coyote or a coyote family very close to our runways. I mean, we love the wildlife, but not right at the runways.
Yeah, absolutely. And another item is painting. You know, you see all the paint out there. Painting on an airfield is a lot different than the roads. We have standards that the FAA comes in and checks. They'll measure it. They'll check the reflectivity in it. So we have a crew that paints specifically. That's airfield maintenance folks. First, they do rubber removal because airplanes leave rubber marks on their runway,
yeah.
And they can only have so much buildup. So we get out there and we paint, we crack seal. A lot of the other stuff is the electrical department. You know, they do a lot of preventative maintenance to make sure our systems stay running. So in the summer, we don't have an electric failure. Or our HVAC folks, like I said, they're cleaning our cooling towers, doing maintenance on them constantly so we don't have that failure.
Here's one for you, and this is a question I have wondered about, and now I hopefully will get an answer. How often do the light bulbs on the runway have to be changed?
Well, that's actually a really tricky question. Now that we've switched to LED versus an incandescent.
Probably long. You're getting longer life.
A lot longer life.
Yeah.
The only thing that really guides that is once you start getting a difference in your lighting when you're looking down a runway, if you have a bright, 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 and kind of a dull one, we need to change that for consistency as well.
Uh-huh.
Or sometimes they go out.
And they see that on their twice daily inspection.
Their nighttime inspection.
Their nighttime inspection.
It's one of the things they're looking for, or if they're out of level or
so
crooked.
If one starts to look a little dull or, yeah.
Yep. There's. Yeah. I mean, there's a rule regulation that actually if there's two lights in a row that we can't have that, we have to issue what's called a NOTAM, a notice mm-hmm. to air missions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pilots are aware that we have two lights out in a row because it creates a break in the visuals. So.
Another quick runway light question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a universal standard that runway lights will be blue?
Actually, runway lights are not blue. Taxiway lights are blue.
Runway
lights are actually white. And then
white.
In the last, I believe it's 1,000 feet, 2,000. Depends on your runway configuration.
Right.
There's different types of runways. But they they alternate amber, white, and then they go to all amber to let you know the end of the runway is coming.
Ooh, very cool.
Then there's
cool.
a threshold light that's red across the end of it that says, hey, there's your end. So, yes,
wow.
And then there's in-pavement lighting, which is for taxiway lines that are green.
Huh.
And then there's obstruction lighting, there's wind cones.
Well,
so now you learn something today.
Well, that's why
runway
I do this radio
white.
Show every day, to try to learn something. Now I know a little bit about why the colors of the lights at the airport. Go ahead, Chris, with some more stuff real
All
quickly.
Right, so another thing, we have a full emergency operations department, or emergency management department. So if there is an emergency or incident out there, we stand up our emergency operations center. We work with the county if needed, the state. We work with our stakeholders.
Yeah, we've had your fire chief on the show. That was kind of interesting. You got a couple new fire trucks coming. And the whole certification that goes into being, well, part of your background, right? You were a firefighter.
I was originally, yes.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
Yeah.
Speaking of firefighters, actually ours are out doing their annual live burn right now in Dallas-Fort Worth. They fly out there, do a live burn for a day and come back. That's their certification. So yes, they have to do that annually. And we have an annual inspection coming up for the FAA as well to check and see, do we meet our response times? Are
sure.
our runway lights in order, our pavement and such? But
so they go to DFW for that training?
Yep.
And there's enough room, if you've ever flown into Dallas-Fort Worth, I don't know what their acreage is there, but there's some room there to do training for sure. Go ahead, Chris.
Yep. So one other thing that's coming up here, talking about emergency management and fire department, police, everybody, but we have what's called a triennial, a full-scale exercise that has to be conducted every 3 years.
Triennial?
Triennial.
Oh, triennial.
Yep.
Okay.
It's conducted every 3 years. It's a full-scale exercise of everything we train for. So February of 2026 is actually our next one. So we're starting to plan for that now. So we run a scenario. We have responders that are maybe part of mutual aid or agreements. Our fire department does their thing. The base is part of our folks as well. But we run a full-scale exercise to test what we train for and what we do.
Mm.
So we'll write a scenario based on something and we'll run with that.
You have a very cool tie on, and
thank you.
This is radio, but we were talking about the iconic Tucson Tower. Your tie is the towers.
It is
the little towers, and it looks very cool.
And a little saguaro pin.
Very cool. Do they sell those at the airport? Those ties?
They do not. They are for special folks as promotions that we might do or events. But so if you ever come out and see us at an event or that we're holding in the community, sometimes we have some pretty cool swag out there as well. And I brought Bill one,
yes,
so he's gonna have to try it out one day.
Brought me some very cool things. We appreciate that, Chris. Okay, well, only got a few seconds left. Again, it's flytucson.com, the website, and all sorts of wonderful things that make our airport. And it's a huge footprint. I was talking about Dallas, Fort Worth having, I don't know how many acres, but Tucson has a huge footprint.
We have over 8,000 acres of land that we own.
8,000 acres?
Yes. Some developable, some not developable. We are always looking for tenants to come out and develop at the airport.
Yeah.
Part of that is protecting our runway protection zones
and
a lot. But
part of your operations checking out all the acreage?
Our police department does.
Wow.
They patrol 8,000 acres.
Oh, boy.
Well, not all of it, but
a lot of it.
Yes.
All right. Chris Dietz, a pleasure having you. Nice meeting you.
Thank you so much.
Chris.
This is a great opportunity, and it's been a great pleasure meeting you as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chris Dietz, the Vice President of Operations at Tucson International Airport and the Tucson Airport Authority, because, Chris, you also have the Ryan Field operation,
correct,
right?
There's the Airport Authority. We manage both the Ryan Field, which is generally Aviation Airport, and then Tucson International as well, which has General Aviation, but it's a commercial service airport where Ryan is not.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great afternoon.
You as well. Thank you.
Okay, midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Our University of Arizona climate scientist, Dr. Zach Guido, is in the house. He'll join me after the mid-show break. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and wow, that sale is going so well over at Green Things in Zocalo Village. Here's the deal. They've got to tear down three buildings there at Zocalo Village, 3384 East River Road. The buildings are in the floodplain, so they decided, let's put some stuff on sale, and some of those beautiful dining room sets, really everything, all of the merchandise, is being up to 50% discounted at Zocalo Village. 3384 East River Road, Zocalo Village, is part of Green Things, so you might want to check it out. They've got a lot of material that has to be sold, otherwise they'd have to physically move it over to the new building on site. But why do that when you can just sell it and at a good price? ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Zach Guido is our Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. We try to bring Zach in every month, but this guy's been really, really busy. And we haven't had Zach on the show since before Christmas. He's been traveling all over the world. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the U of A campus. Everything from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. You traveled, you were over in Bangladesh. You've been over there a couple of times. That is a long haul to get there. That must be like the exact other side of the world.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Yeah. 13-hour difference in time.
13-hour time zone. So yeah. I know you've had some projects over there. You've worked very closely with USAID, and now with USAID being shut down, this is not only going to impact maybe millions of people around the world, but it impacts you personally, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really been a difficult couple weeks, to be honest. I have one large 3-year project that has been funded by USAID. It's on pause right now. The unfortunate part of the story is that 2 years of research prior was culminating in two pilots, one in Bangladesh, which is why I went there right after the holidays, and one in Kenya. You know, field teams on the ground ready to go. It's time sensitive. One of the pilots is looking at a world food program intervention that's still ongoing. So very, very time sensitive. All hands down. Can't do anything. Calls into question. I'm not sure we'll be able to, even if the project itself commences again, I'm not sure we'll be able to finish the research. So me personally, it's been difficult for that. But, you know, the story is so much bigger than that. I have colleagues at the university whose teammates are, got their reduction in workforce notice. They're fully funded by large USAID projects, doing some really amazing work. And yeah, right now it's just at a standstill, and you know the news at Washington is not very good.
What were these projects? The one in East Africa and then in Bangladesh, were they trying to improve food security?
Yeah, what we were doing is we were working with the Bureau of Humanitarian Assistance, which provides aid after disasters like hurricanes or drought or conflict. A lot of times it's food assistance or it's cash assistance, and there's other things that they do. So we were working with the Bureau of Humanitarian Assistance monitoring and evaluation team to develop new approaches to monitoring what these interventions are actually doing. So more transparency, more accountability, to be a little bit more real with the kinds of impacts that they're having, not just short term, but a lot of these interventions, even if it's food or cash, have these long-term persistent benefits that aren't really accounted for. So we were, developing ways to tell that story in a more rigorous way.
Mm. This is kind of referred to as soft power in the world. The United States has been really a leader in all sorts of disease prevention and all this. I've heard stories of medicines that are on the loading dock that are just going to go bad.
Yeah, I've heard those stories too. Yeah. I mean, USAID is the major global donor for humanitarian assistance and development assistance, like worldwide. People depend on that aid for food, for medicine, for training. I mean, there's a 60-year infrastructure set up around it, and yeah, everything is. I mean,
well, I hope it's not, going to be permanently disabled. I hope there will be some role that the United States will play.
I have no idea. All I know is that the current agency, congressionally mandated agency, USAID, has been basically dismantled, and there's talk of it moving in the State Department. I personally think that support foreign assistance will not go to zero, but priorities are shifting. Perhaps mechanisms are shifting, and that sort of thing is playing out right now, and I have no idea where it's going to go.
But it's huge for many university faculty like yourself.
Yeah, and I think at University of Arizona, there's at least $20 million of awards that I'm familiar with,
right,
that are affected by this. We were also in the process of gearing up for a major innovation lab proposal that is probably now, the timeline has shifted, at the very least, might not exist. So I think, yeah, I mean, these are, USAID has been a major supporter, particularly across public health and agriculture for universities. So I think this is it's a pretty big shock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
let's bring it back to this country and the United States and Southern California, and actually California. The numbers are up in Oroville and some of the places have 24 to 48 inches, believe it or not, of rain. and the snowstorms have been really, they were saying that January, like here in Tucson, had been extremely dry. And now California has what we've talked about before, the atmospheric rivers happening.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when the big picture, so I was just looking up the numbers. I mean, it has been pretty significantly dry here in southern Arizona. I think Tucson at the airport, it's the third driest October through February.
Yeah.
On record. It's not unexpected, right? Because we are in a La Nina year. Mm-hmm. It's a weak La Nina, but those tend to increase our chances for
a lot of drying.
A lot of drying.
In this part of the world, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the classic signal is dry in the Southwest and in the Pacific Northwest, say Western Washington, Northern
Cascades,
Oregon.
Cascades, and that's getting tons of snow.
Yeah, and it's not as wet as you otherwise would expect up there.
Mm-hmm.
But every winter there is a lot of variability, even in these El Nino, La Nina years. So that only accounts for a small fraction of the of the variance year to year. And a major player is, as you mentioned, these atmospheric rivers, which every single year bring about 50% of the precipitation to California. So they're major features. They happen to a higher or lower frequency every year. There's one currently. There was one, 10 days ago as well. But,
they're kind of referred to as rivers in the sky.
Yeah, they have a good name, atmospheric rivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're basically these conduits of a concentrated water vapor that tap juicy sort of subtropical, tropical air, you know, you've got these mid-latitude storms that are spinning off the West Coast that sort of reach down into lower latitudes where it's warmer and moister and fling those bands of concentrated water to the West Coast. And then, of course, you've got coastal ranges. Mm-hmm. So when you have that air, moist air move over the mountains, mm-hmm. it rises and condenses and squeezes out, and you get massive amounts of precipitation and, you know, the coastal ranges and in the Sierras. And then that can all, you know, move all the way inland to, you know, Idaho, Montana, Colorado, northern Arizona. We're going to get some perhaps up in Flagstaff today, which is and maybe tomorrow, which is, you know, from this, mm-hmm. is related to this storm that's now striking California.
These storms have really, really not pushed far enough for us in southern Arizona. And
correct.
It's just been so dry.
Correct.
Here.
Phoenix, yeah. I don't think, has received any rain.
No.
Yeah.
So we may be on pace here to have one of maybe the driest winter since records have been kept in Tucson.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, let's see if I can find this. Well, I can't find it quickly enough. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I think we're at a half an inch of rain total. There were
since 1st.
October 1.
Yeah, October.
So if you want to go back.
Wow. That's really,
or
really.
Change that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had two events. One that was the majority of it, and then a small one more.
And even tomorrow, they're saying that maybe like a third of an inch if we're lucky in some places in the valley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we are in the running for the driest winter at the Tucson airport on record. But, and, you know, we still got, we don't have that much left.
No, 2 weeks, right? Because the climate calendar is a little different. Be October maybe to March 1st, or maybe it's April 1st.
Yeah, we can get
maybe mid-March.
A March storm or two.
But we
two,
really do, you know, we're kind of running out of time.
We are running out of time.
All right, let's take a break, speaking of time. Dr. Zach Guido is here. We're talking climate, and Zach sticks around for segment number 4, as do I. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. Tomorrow, Jan Lesher will be our Friday Focus interview on the show at 12:04. Right now, I want to tell you about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Great getaway, about 3-hour drive approximately, depending on where you are in the Tucson Valley, but it's an easy straight shot. Hit I-10, then over to Lordsburg, take a left, and up the mountain. To Silver City, the up the mountain being, I don't know, 5,000 to 6,000 feet, somewhere like that. Great hiking over there. A lot of outdoor activities. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Zach Guido of the University of Arizona, climate scientist, is with us. We were talking about the very, very wet February. Really, it's been the last couple of weeks because January was very dry, like we've been very dry over in California, but they're getting a lot of rain and it's been very sparse for us. I think Zach pointed out the third driest on record. If it keeps up, we could probably be the driest on record, Zach Guido. So hope that's not the case, but then we've got to just hang on till summer rainy season, i.e. monsoon. And we've talked about this. Boy, good luck trying to predict a monsoon season.
I know, I love it. Like, it's still in the winter and we're talking about the monsoon season, but it's true.
Got to start looking forward to it, but boy, it is so hard to tell whether you're going to have a good monsoon.
Yeah, I think, like, just to bring it back a little bit to the weather.
Please.
There has been an interesting great precipitation gradient in California. So Northern California has seen some of its wettest, in some places, its wettest year on record. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, basically south of San Francisco, it's been very, very, very dry. And obviously, mm-hmm. like, our area, you know, Tucson, Phoenix, and the Southwest mm-hmm. here, you know, has caught on some of that dryness. But really, the trajectory of these atmospheric rivers, you can look at a map of snowpack conditions across the West, and there's this southwest northeast trending small line of above average higher elevation stations, which basically document where the trajectory of the
but I bet if gone. You look at the Cascades and up to Mount Hood and all those areas, they are really getting productive snow.
Yeah, basically, you know, sort of central Oregon and north have been, you know, less than. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been maybe slightly above average and much below average, oh. right? And so south of that, I've been much above average. Mm-hmm. I was looking at Mount Bachelor, which is near Bend, Oregon, and they have some of the better snowpacks across the West. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you know, the snowpack condition across the West in general has been okay for much of the northern West, and then you get to Reno and south in California and much of Utah and southern Colorado and obviously Arizona, New Mexico, and it's been really bad. Mm. So you can very much see the dividing line between an okay winter in terms of snowpack and a very dry winter in terms of
what's
snowpack.
A skier to do? Yeah, speaking did a little ski trip. Where did you go?
Well, yeah, so every year we take a trip and, mm-hmm. You know, as a true, you know, climatologist, we choose our mountains the week before based on the best weather conditions.
Okay. And what turned out to be the best?
Yeah. And it turned out that it was, Tahoe, Northern Tahoe, North Lake of Tahoe got like 50 something inches from an atmospheric river in the week prior, but it was on top of like very sparse snow conditions. So
really?
It quickly turned into good to okay skiing.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But I heard Mount Shasta in that area has had a lot of snow. Maybe not or no?
I didn't look at Mount Shasta. Okay. We don't go there very often. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So if we have to start looking toward July for rain, we need rain really bad. And June and can be so spotty, as you know. A couple of years ago we started early in mid-June?
I think this last year we had.
We had this
interesting feature. I mean, you can't count on June. Just write June off.
Yeah.
June is hot. Just think of June being exceptionally hot.
Yes, and May.
May is going to be dry. So we, you know, again, we're on the heels of a pretty bad monsoon season.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, couple that with let's continue this dryness, so a dry winter. And, yeah, you get two back-to-back dry seasons, and, yeah, you're really starting to feel the pucker from the landscape. And it does put a lot of pressure on the monsoon to
Tell me La Nina is going away. That would be good news.
Well, La Nina, yeah, I mean, the expectation
bye
is...
Bye-bye!
Yep. So it was a weak La Nina this year.
Okay, well...
And it's likely going to fade sometime in the next few months. But when we think about the monsoon, like there aren't many, you know, we don't have access to many ways to predict the monsoon.
No,
you know, it's just really difficult. Mm-hmm. So kind of rely on average conditions and just hope for the best. You know, as we get a little bit closer to the monsoon, there might be a few signals with, you know, what the waning atmospheric conditions are like, or what the land, how much snowpack is on the landscape, what the ocean temperatures off the Pacific look like, up coast of California look like, and those kinds of things. But there's so much variability in the monsoon year to year that you're really hard pressed to find something with any predictive value.
You weren't with us in January on the show, but boy, January was really a cold month here in Tucson.
It was, yeah.
I had been saying that it was the coldest in 25 years, and there were some stretches in there, a week or four or five straight days that were the coldest in 25 years. But when it was all said and done for January, it was the 10th. It was the coldest in 10 years.
Yeah. And that can happen. You know, you get these, depending on the position of the jet stream, you can ferry in these cold, low pressure systems that come down from the north, and they're relatively dry. They're moving across a large swath of landscape that's sort of sucked out all the moisture. And if they're not able to pick up subtropical and tropical moisture to its south, it's basically just cold and maybe a little bit windy. And that's largely what happened. So you do get quite a bit
of... It was cold, dry, very dry air. In fact, Zach Guido, and I think I said something about this to you, Tom Fairbanks, on the other side of the glass, because we had kind of a discussion about dew points. I think we hit a record low dew point.
Negative dew point?
Yes. And I'm still not quite sure what that all means, but I guess it means it was really, really dry.
It's cold and there's not a lot of moisture in the air.
There'd have to be enough humidity to what?
Well, you'd have to get to whatever that dew point temperature says.
Let's say it's negative five. You'd actually
have to get the atmosphere to that temperature in order for the moisture in the atmosphere to condense into rain or snow.
Wow.
So you're not, it's really hard to get the moisture at that here to that level. So
it was, I think, one of the lowest dew points ever in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, and again, I just go back to, I mean, this was the forecast, not the temperature forecast. The temperature forecast is always slightly above average because there's just such a strong trend.
But what was the forecast?
Well, the forecast was, it was basically a very much a La Nina kind of forecast, which is
dry
in the Southwest. And you know, that has largely played out. I think any given year, you know, maybe that accounts for about 50% of the, probably less of the variance. Much less than the variance, actually, probably more like 25%.
Life is all about change. And boy, when it comes to your business, Zach Guido, we're talking weather and climate. You couldn't ask for more change, could you?
That's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah, that's it.
There's not a loss of things to talk about.
I know. And we'll talk about them in March with you. Thank you, Zach. All the best to you. All right. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido and Tom Fairbanks, who shares an interest, I kind of think of myself as a weather hobbyist. And Tom, you are too. You're very interested in weather. Anyway, on behalf of all of us here, hope everybody has a great afternoon.